This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to The Athletic Mind, your go-to podcast for maximizing your mental game. I'm your host, Taylor Cook, a mental performance coach and a former professional hockey goalie. Join me for open conversations about mental health, mindset, and performance. Whether you're an athlete or coach, you'll discover a wealth of tools, resources, and insights designed to transform the way you play and lead. Let's get into it. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Athletic Mind. I'm your host, Taylor, former U Sports and pro hockey goalie, now mental performance coach, working with athletes and coaches to help transform their game. This month, I'm super excited about bringing to you some very amazing, wonderful guests that are making history in the women's sports industry. And what better way to celebrate Women's History Month than by speaking to some amazing women on amazing missions in sport. As always, if you have not yet left a rating and review for the podcast, I would be deeply appreciative if you would go ahead and take a minute out of your day to do that. This is what really does help the podcast grow and reach new listeners just like you. And that, of course, is the goal, is to empower more listeners with the tools and strategies to be able to take their performance into their own hands. So if you haven't done that, please go ahead and do so. I really, really appreciate it. And if you're not following along on social, you can do that by following me, Taylor, at TaylorBCook_ on TikTok and Instagram. And you can also connect with me on LinkedIn if that's where you are as well. For those who might be interested in some group coaching and accountability, I'm looking at putting together a 3-month program where we'll have bi-weekly group coaching calls and accountability partners where athletes and coaches will be able to learn some mental coaching strategies that are going to help improve performance, help them set goals and track their progress, discuss some hot topics in sports, and more importantly, just to have a positive and supportive space where you're going to be able to get advice and support from others, and also to be able to provide that to other people in the group as well. So this is something that would be of interest to you. Please let me know. Would love to hear from you and have you join. And lastly, if you're an athlete and you want to step up your game, or if you're a coach and you want to improve the experience that you are bringing for your athletes, you can learn more about mental performance coaching at www.tailored-minds.com. You can see the show notes for the direct link. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I am joined by special guest Sabrina. Is it Ostberg or Ostberg? Ostberg? Awesome. Okay. Well, I am joined by Sabrina today, and I'm really excited about this episode because we're going to be talking all about NIL, or N-I-L, or name, image, likeness. And so there's so many questions that I have about this whole process, mainly because, you know, I wish that this was around when I was still playing in university, because there's so much opportunity here. But I feel like there's no better person to talk to about this specific topic than you, because you're obviously very immersed in this space. I think it was yesterday, the day before, I saw that you were ranked number 12 in the South area for athlete creators, which is absolutely huge. So first, congratulations there. But yeah, thanks so much for taking the time to be here on a competition day. Appreciate you being here.
Yes, it's a big deal. We're starting off our outdoor season today, so that's really awesome to look forward to. But thank you so much for the introduction. Happy to be here.
Right. Well, we'll dive right into it. Like I said, I know you have competition today, and I want to be respectful of that. So tell our audience a little bit about yourself, what it is that you're currently competing in. Are you a student athlete? Are you a pro athlete? Tell us a little bit about your background in sports, Sabrina.
Yeah, so currently I'm a Division I track and field athlete at Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee. If you don't know Belmont, hopefully you know Vanderbilt University. They're a bigger school, and so we're 5 minutes away from there. We're more like their sister school. In track and field, I'm a thrower. What do I throw? Well, mainly attitude. I'm joking. I do hammer throw and shot put. And for those who are not familiar with that, shot put's the 8-pound metal ball that you put to your neck and you throw as far as you can. And then hammer throw is that shot put ball, but with a long wire attached to it and you spin in circles. Then you also try and throw it as far as you can.
Very cool. And I think that this is such a unique sport compared to some of our previous guests where we have mostly team backgrounds, whereas this sounds a much more of like an individual sport in that sense. Of course, you have like your family from the track and field, like you're training with them and those types of things, but individual competitions are still a very different mental game, I think. So share a little bit of insight as to like what actually inspired you to get into this specific sport in general.
Yeah, so to explain that, I think I need to also cover more about my background of who I am. So I'm originally from San Diego, California. Lived there for 16 years, born and raised there. And I have an original background in long distance running. My mom used to be a marathon runner. She would just run marathons for fun. She was one of those crazy people. And she would bring me along on her runs. I didn't start my first sport until middle school. And I started running with her. I really loved it. Broke my leg in middle school, so I started playing field hockey. So I also have a background of 3 years in field hockey. My freshman year of high school, I thought, well, I have this long distance running background. I'm going to do the mile. I really love the mile. Did it until my sophomore year. And that's when COVID happened. As we all have that common experience, everything stopped. And it was, we probably only had one track meet. And then the whole season was over. So I didn't really have much of a season my sophomore year. During around that same time, once we stopped doing everything, I saw this CrossFit Games documentary on Netflix. And it talked about the CrossFit Games and the whole background. And this is like the Olympics of CrossFit. So it's like the biggest stage yet for it. I saw this and I was really inspired by it. I thought to myself, wow, if they can do that, they're lifting, swimming, biking, running, doing all these different sports. I thought to myself, man, I can do that too. And it was one of those films where it just inspires you to do something, just work out and just do it. And so I did it. And I was like, man, I'm gonna be just like the people I saw on the TV. And so I started doing CrossFit. I went to a local gym. At that time during COVID, you couldn't get the front door, so I'll go in through the back door and I'll go do a workout with the other people who were afraid to work out after a couple of months into COVID. The next day after CrossFit, I started doing Olympic weightlifting. My best friend from California just so happens to be a three-time National Youth Olympic weightlifter. So she has a strong background of weightlifting. I'm probably only 16 years old at the time, and she's been doing this since she's been 12. And so I was like, man, I would love to do weightlifting with you so I could get stronger for CrossFit. She was like, yeah, join me in the club. And lots of CrossFit gyms have an Olympic weightlifting club attached to it just because Olympic weightlifting is such a strong component of CrossFit. And so I did those two sports simultaneously. And then my mom saw, this is probably about 20 later in 2020, so still sophomore year, my mom saw this YouTube video titled Top 10 Reasons Why I Moved to Chattanooga, Tennessee. She liked all 10 reasons so much. We sold my house within a week, drove across the US, and now my family lives in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We lived here for the past 3 years now. And so I moved to Tennessee. Now I'm halfway through my junior year of high school. And I think to myself, how am I going to make friends? I'm in the state where we have no family here. We don't know anyone here. How do I make friends? Well, I decided, why not join a sports team on campus? The only background I have was in field hockey and track. But in Tennessee, field hockey is not a sport. There's only lacrosse that's similar to it, but that was the same time as track. And so I was like, well, I'll do track because that's something I know how to do. The first day of track practice, I go up to my coach. I said, hey, I'm going to be your best one miler because that's the only sport I've ever done in track. And he laughed at me. And I was like, what's so funny? I'm really good at it. Some background information up to this point, I had not been running up for a year. I've only been doing lifting. And so he was like, you know what? You'd be a really good thrower. Throwing? What's throwing? He's like, something you'd be really good at. I said, no. I'm a long distance runner, even though I hadn't been running. So he said, okay, you can go on a run with the cross country team. Go run 3 miles. So I said, easy. I used to do this as a warm up. I go on this run. I'm huffing and puffing. And I did not remember how hard running was. And so by the end of this run, I had officially retired from long distance running. It was traumatic enough for me to just be absolutely humbled by the cross country team that I just stopped running. The next day I joined throwing because my coach was right. And 2 to 3 months later, I ended up becoming a top 6 in the state of Tennessee for shot put after just picking up the sport 2 to 3 months prior. And I was like, wow, I guess I'm pretty good at it. And part of that's due to my background in CrossFit and Olympic weightlifting because it's a strength sport where you're just chucking a ball as hard as you can. And lots of girls my age weren't doing what I was doing, where I'm waking up at 4 a.m., going to the gym, working out for 2 hours, doing CrossFit, going to school, after school, going to track practice, and then going back to the gym after that to get some more lifting in. That's just not common for a junior high school girl. So that definitely gave me an advantage. From going to state, I got recruited by Division I school, Austin Peay State University. They liked my performance at state. At the time, I didn't think I was going to be a college athlete. That was never my goal, but it just so happened that it found me. And so I was thinking my senior year, where do I want to go to college? I was going to go to this college in Tennessee called Tennessee Tech, which is about an hour and a half away from Nashville. And there's nothing there. It's in the middle of nowhere. There's just 2 donut shops there. But they had the world's largest CrossFit gym. It all comes back to CrossFit, 5 minutes away from campus. And if you do CrossFit, something that you'll realize is that you either really, really love the sport or you hate it. There's no in between. And I really, really love the sport so much. I had a shirt that said, I love CrossFit. I was one of those people. I live, breathe, eat, sleep CrossFit. So much I was going to go to CrossFit, go to this college just for CrossFit. But my summer before I went to college, I started to get burnout from CrossFit. And that's when I realized that track would pay more for my college because I was offered a scholarship. So I ended up going to Austin Peay State University for a year. After my first year at the college, my coach quit at the end of the year in May. And I had 2 weeks in the transfer portal to find a new school. So I was applying to all these different schools, Duke, Kennesaw, Tennessee. And then I had a friend at Belmont who played softball. And she was like, hey, maybe look at Belmont as a joke. And I was like, why not? I'm applying to every school I can think of. And so I ended up just being the school that I didn't know I needed. And so then now I'm here at Belmont today as a sophomore.
Wow. So many great tidbits in this whole explanation of your background and your journey from San Diego all the way to Tennessee now. And so I of course want to, from the mental performance side of things, I want to hear a little bit more about, okay, like you said, not very many high school students are getting up 4 a.m. They're doing basically 2 to 3 workouts a day. So you eventually realize you're getting burnt out from this. So one, what was the key indicator for you that made you realize that it's time for me to pull back here? Because I feel like most young athletes especially don't really have any sort of internal alarm system that's letting them know, I need to pull back and stop doing this. A lot of athletes will choose to just push through that and continue because that's what we're trained to do a lot of the time. So one, How did you manage that? And also transitioning from one state to another that's absolutely nowhere near one another. How was that transition for you as well?
Yeah, so answering the first question, the number one indicator for me was that I just did not like doing CrossFit as much. When I would, the thing about CrossFit, it's more of a community-based sport. And I loved going there. I would do class workouts. But as I began to advance more and do individualized training, I was training by myself in the corner by myself. I just said by myself twice. But I was training alone. And so when you take a community-based sport and then make it more individualized, you have to have a different set of determination. And it was just really hard for me as like a 16, 17-year-old girl to just work out by myself in the corner every morning and just have that motivation. Because then I'm like, all right, what am I working towards at this point? What's the goal with the sport? And I think every athlete has a goal with their sport, either to make it pro, to go to the next level. And for me, I was struggling to see where that next level was for me. It wasn't just about being better. It was about trying to go somewhere. But I didn't know where that somewhere was. So not knowing where that was just gave me kind of just this internal thinking of like, why am I doing this? And so when I had that, why am I doing this? It made me think, well, I don't really see the joy in doing it. However, I was more passionate about Olympic weightlifting. I still love that component of CrossFit. And for those of you who are not really familiar with the sport, it's more like every sport you could think of mixed into one. So you have that running, all these different mixtures of exercises put together. But I love the Olympic weightlifting part of it, which is clean and jerk and snatch. It is not powerlifting. I'm not doing bench, squat, and deadlift, two different things. And so noticing that I love that part of it more, that's when I stopped doing CrossFit during that summer. And I purely focused on just Olympic weightlifting. I also had a friend that worked out with me. She was the same age as me, just a couple months older. Her name's Ellie. And she transferred to a different gym, different CrossFit gym, probably about 10 minutes away. And so I noticed that she liked the gym more. It was just a lot better for her. So I thought, I'm going to try out this gym as well. So I went to a new CrossFit gym. I love the coaches more, just a different community. I like their programming a lot better. And so that once I went to that gym, that's when I started to have more of a love for CrossFit again. But then I still just lean more towards just weightlifting because CrossFit's more cardio based and doing more gymnastics. And for me, that's where I struggled. I didn't want to struggle for a couple of years trying to learn that skill. I just like to focus on what I was good at, which was the strength part of the lifting. And so I just wanted to focus more on that because then that's when I, during that same summer is when I ended up becoming the Tennessee state champion for Olympic weightlifting. And I thought, wow, I have a future here. And I see where that next level is, hopefully to go to the Olympics for Olympic weightlifting, which would be really cool. So that's why I just want to focus on something else. And I lost that love for CrossFit. Can you repeat the second question again?
Yeah, no problem. I usually don't ask two questions at the same time because of this, but yeah. So like transferring from like one state to another, that's a huge transition for athletes who are already at like a university level to make, but you were making this at high school. So kind of explain what that transition was like, what were the ups and downs and how you were able to kind of push through and figure your way out.
Yeah. I think I had an advantage in the fact that I moved early because lots of people are experiencing moving to a new state and a new school once they're in their first year of college. I had this experience 2 years earlier before that. And so moving to this new state where we don't know anyone, it was really difficult because when my family moved with, it was my two parents, mom and dad, and my two other brothers. When we got to Tennessee, we built a new house and we were told that the house was going to be ready in a week. So we get there, we're like, all right, we're going to stay in a hotel for a week. And then that week became 2 weeks because then the house wasn't done being built yet. And then we had to extend it to a month. And the next thing you know, we're staying in a hotel for 2 months because the house took longer than we anticipated to build. So now you have this family of five staying in this little hotel room for 2 months. We don't know anyone. School has not started yet. We don't have anything to do. And so that's when CrossFit became my escape. Because that's the only time I could get away from my family and just do something that wasn't staying in a hotel room. And from that, I started going crazy. I was like, man, I'm not really socializing with anyone. And when you spend that much time with people, whether you're really close to them or not, it gets really tiring. And so I started becoming kind of depressed from that. And it was really hard just because I didn't have anything to look forward to. So when school started, I put on my best first day of school outfit. I was so excited. People were saying, oh, school. I'm like, I'm so excited for this because it's something that's not just staying at a hotel room. And I would spend just time. I would sleep in my car at times because I didn't want to sleep in the same room as my brother. I was like, I'm done with you. I need to go to spend hours in my car just because it's the only other place that wasn't the hotel room. And so that part was really difficult in the beginning in Tennessee, where like my first introduction to Tennessee was a hotel room. And so that was a little different. And then once we transitioned to house, we're like, oh my gosh, more space. Everyone has their own room now. It's a lot better. And that's when CrossFit was just really nice to have at that time, because that's where I found the community that I didn't know I needed in Tennessee, because that's where I met my first friends and first support system. That's before I became burnt out from it. But it had important roots for me. And then going to new school, I'm from San Diego, where you have lots of people move into the city. I thought I was originally from a small town until I moved out of it and I realized it was not a small town at all. It's a pretty big city where we have 32 different beaches. And now I go to the small town where everyone grew up there. I've never met people, so many people in one area that all grew up together. So I'm going to school now with people that have known each other since kindergarten, who have had these friend groups since for years. And so now trying to break into these friend groups and make new friends was really difficult, because now you have all these cliques in school. So I had a really hard time making friends. I didn't really make a lot of friends because everyone was very cliquey. You know, you had your popular kids, you had all these little high school stereotypes. And I just stood out because, first of all, I was really athletic. And then I had this video that recently blew up about 2 years ago from today, where we had a marine recruiter come to our school, and they have this pull-up bar where they tell you if you do X amount of pull-ups, you get a t-shirt. And so I told my friend, hey, record me. I'm going to do some pull-ups. So I just do 5 pull-ups. And in this video, the marine recruiter is just really impressed. It's like, whoa. This video ended up getting 14 million views on TikTok. I started exploding on TikTok. I gained 40K followers within a week from this video. And everyone in my school started to know me from this video. I became social media famous during this time. That's when my rise to fame came in the social media area, because then I started a fitness account also in high school. And so people also knew me in high school from this fitness account. And lots of people were intimidated from me because on social media, I portray myself as a strong individual. And so for people who don't know me and they just know me as a strong person, they're like, oh, please don't beat me up. Like, I'm not that mean, guys. I mean, you could be strong, but nice. But lots of people just didn't want to talk to me, or they were jealous of me. So they wouldn't really say things. So I also had that side of it too.
And now for a quick word from our sponsor. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. Please play responsibly.
Yeah, I actually saw this video. I think maybe you reposted it like the other day or something. I saw it. Got a good chuckle, but also was like quite impressed as well. I mean, most female athletes have a hard time on the pull-up bar, but you were just given it. So good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so great. And like to your point about kind of coming across as like strong and confident, it can then become like, unfortunately, intimidating for other women and females to approach you just because it's such a strong like presence. And a lot of women are not necessarily used to that or don't know how to approach those things, which is, I think, whole other podcast topic in and of itself. But Yeah, I mean, even like looking at your social media presence versus like talking to you is like not two different things, but not what I would have expected either, to be completely honest. And I think like you're so open and so like friendly and outgoing, and like I think that comes across for sure on your profile as well. But it's again like the strong and confident thing that can make people kind of misjudge things and can also clearly make it a little bit more challenging for you when you were in high school trying to make friends in that period too.
Yes, and something to add on to it, even moving to college to here, all my roommates I have currently were all randoms. And so when I first met them, they were all intimidated by me, and they told me that the only thing they knew about me was my social media page. And so when they saw this strong fitness stuff, they're really scared to talk to me. They're like, please don't beat me up. And then as they learn more about me and started talking to me, they're like, oh no, you beat someone up for us. I'm like, it's not what you think.
Yeah, you definitely give me the vibe of like the person that you go to when someone does something absolutely horrendous and you're like gonna go and put them in line. But you're also just like very, I don't know, like I don't want to compare it to like, you know, kind of like the biker guys who are like really big and then they're just like these little teddy bears on the inside. Like it's similar in a situation, like similar in my opinion, but I love it. I absolutely love it. So first, thank you again for sharing what that experience was like for you both, from like transitioning to a different state and also going through the burnout and being able to kind of like figure out what it was for you, like why you needed to pull back, all of those things. I think that's really important to share, and wanted to at least have a little bit of like a mental focus here too. But
right,
like I said, we're going to be talking everything NIL, NIL today. And I'm really excited about this because I think there's so many misconceptions about what it is and how to actually get involved and to actually benefit from these things. So like, obviously this started for you when you were in high school. You said you blew up on TikTok overnight. You gained like 40,000 followers, which is huge. I personally was like at that point in life during COVID where I saw everybody was making TikToks and I was like, oh, like I'm not going to be the person to jump on the same bandwagon. Like no way. And I actually didn't get TikTok until maybe last year or something, or like the year before. It took me a really long time, but I'm here now, still doing terribly, but I'm here.
You're working through it. You're working through it. You're going to get it.
We'll see. We'll see. But you're very deep into it, not just on TikTok, but also on other forms of social media as well, Instagram and Snapchat as well. So like, share a little bit about what this NIL experience has been like for you. Like, why did you choose to get even further immersed into this after blowing up on TikTok, and how this has benefited you in your life?
The cool thing about NIL is that when I went into college as my freshman year, that's when it started to explode. And for people that don't know what NIL is, it stands for a name, image, likeness. Before 2021, college athletes were not able to monetize off of these three things. So for example, if a college athlete were to do a deal with a company, promote a product, they would get in trouble for that. They would get kicked off their team. There's all these penalties for that. But after 2021, now college athletes are now able to monetize, and that's a really big deal. So this topic is relatively new for everyone listening. And there's lots of just information that people don't know about it because it's such a new topic. And for me, going into college, people often ask like, oh, are you going to do NIL? Or what is it? How'd you get into it? And for me, going into a space where it was not really, it just started, there was not a lot of information about it. I've already been doing social media before I went into college. So I was lucky enough to have NIL experience without even realizing it. I started a fitness account my senior year of high school. And back then, 2 to 3 years ago, every fitness account ended in _fit for their username. And so my username today is Sabrina10_fit, because that's how everyone named their fitness accounts back then. And so I would make all this fitness content about my gym life and CrossFit. I also dabbled in Spartan racing. So I was doing 4 sports at the same time. And I post all about this. And when I was really deep involved in Olympic weightlifting And I needed some money to help me go to the Olympic championships for the Tennessee State lifting meet. And so I reached out to my local supplement store called Nutrition Factory. Think of them like GNC, if you're familiar with them, just supplements. And so I said, hey, I have this meet coming up. I really do believe I'm going to win. I have this growing fitness account I could promote you guys on. I just need some money for travel, food, hotel, like to pay the registration fee. They're like, okay, like we believe in you. I've always been in the store. I know the owner. And so they gave me some money to pay for all this. And so I wore their shirt. I promoted their products. And they loved what I was doing so much that after the meet and after I ended up winning, they said, hey, we'll love for you to be our social media content creator. Oh, okay. I've never done that before. And so then I had experience in the store making social media content for them. And because Olympic weightlifting is not an NCAA sport, that was completely allowed before NIL. And luckily, I did not know that was. So if this was an NCAA sport, I would have been in so much trouble and I would not even have known. But luckily, it's not. And so it was really cool that I was fortunate enough to have that experience beforehand. So I knew what it's like to do a deal with a company and what's that like. Because NIL deals is really, you're doing marketing for companies. You know, you're promoting their products, you're giving exposure to it because of your platform and your reach and your audience. Going into college, I'm thinking, okay, you have this new thing. So I went to modern day Google, TikTok, and I thought, okay, how do I do NIL? I typed in the Google search bar or the TikTok search bar, how to get an NIL deal. And most NIL deals is usually you'll work with the company and you promote them on your social media. And you can also do other things like public appearances, podcast appearances, things like that. But most of it's on social media. I found nothing on TikTok that explained to me how to do it. I thought for sure by now someone would have made a video how to get a deal. But in 2021, the first year of NIL, there is no information about this. And so I was completely stumped. I'm like, how do I attack this new topic that no one really knows how to attack? And that's when I started doing lots of self-research. Started reaching out to brands on Instagram, sending them a DM, hey, this is who I am. This is what I can do. This is why I'd be valuable to you. And I love your product. Let's work together. And I'll reach out to all these brands I personally love and use. And then lots of them were just no response, all that. But my first big deal was with First Forum. They're a really popular supplement company in the CrossFit space. So the first ever supplement brand I've ever used. And I was super excited when they responded to my DM, ended up hopping on a call with the director of sponsorships. We connected really well. I did a 5-month deal with First Forum. That was really big for me because working with brands gives you that validation, is not the right word, but it gives you that credibility, is the word I was looking for, where you're saying, oh, I work with X, Y, and Z, so that they know you're a real person, that you're working with all these high-end brands. So it's really cool to have a big name like that in my pocket. So when I go to other companies, be like, hey, I work with so-and-so, and they're like, oh, like, you work with so-and-so. I'm like, yeah, and I did. And so then I would reach out to all these companies. I would make a list. I made my own way of how to do NIL. So I make a list on my notes of all the companies I reached out to. And then after I sent them a message on Instagram, I would write their name down. I put a certain emoji next to the name, so like a yellow heart. 3 days later, I would follow up with them on Instagram. This is where I learned the power of follow up. So I follow up with them. Cool. Put a different emoji, let's say a rose. Okay, rose means 3 more days, another 3 days, follow up with them. I would follow up these companies up to like 6-7 times. By a certain number, I would get the hit, maybe they're not interested. But I would keep reaching out every couple of days because I noticed that some companies, you just need to follow up and that's when they'll respond because they see how much it means to you to reach out to them. Otherwise, all these companies get so many messages in a day that they're like, okay, like this isn't really that important. So you have to keep bothering these companies until they give you a response. And so that's when I'm like, okay, like I kind of had to be a little businesswoman in a sense, because I had to negotiate with these companies how much money I wanted, what the deal was going to look like, what I was creating for them, what they wanted from me in a video. all these different things. And the other side of NIL that people don't talk about is that you're really learning life skills through this. I learned how to negotiate. I learned how to be more professional, how to create top tier emails to companies, how to brand myself. I learned that I am a brand. How do I create that brand? How do I foster that brand? How do I make it bigger so that when I graduate from college, it's something that I can continue to pursue and make money off of? So that way it can continue to be successful, grow, and thrive. So I'm learning all these things. I'm thinking to myself, there are so many people that don't know what NIL is, or they want to get in the space, but they don't know how to, and they're not learning these valuable skills. As a college athlete, you don't have a lot of time to do internships, to do all this real life skills and just work experience. With NIL on top of it, you definitely don't have time. But if you use it in a way that you get that experience from it, you become even more valuable. I've talked to people who have graduated college after being an athlete. They're all American or top, like team captain. And they'll tell me that doesn't matter when they're in the workplace. They don't care if you're all American. You have no work experience compared to someone who's gained all these internships throughout their college days. And so it's really cool to have that other side of it.
Yeah, I'm happy that you shed some light on like your journey through like figuring out what NIL was, how do I become an NIL athlete? And also, like, you just had to pave your own way. If you don't have an answer for something and there's nobody else who's talking about it, well, instead of just giving up, like you chose, well, okay, let's figure this out together, me and me, straight up. So I think it's really great that you kind of carved your own path in what this looks like. And to be completely honest, I myself don't even really have an understanding of how other athletes are going about this, if there is some sort of like standardized process that other people are using, or if it is just more like a personalized process of, okay, like what brands do I like and love and feel like would be a really good fit for me as a person, as an athlete, as a brand. I think it's really interesting to hear your experience in this situation, and would like to hear actually a bit further, because you mentioned at the end that you've had, you know, some All-American athletes who are now no longer playing and are in a workspace, whether it's corporate or something like this, but this is no longer as important, and especially in a workplace. Okay, maybe for hiring purposes, I, of course, as a former athlete, still see the value that hiring an athlete brings, even if they don't have internship experience. They have so many other really great transferable qualities. But how would you kind of give advice to someone who has transitioned from this into the workspace and say, like, you can still use these types of experiences to your advantage?
To answer the first question about the NIL space, currently there are three different types of groups that are killing it in NIL. And it looks different for everyone. There's lots of different ways to do it. But number one is if you go to a big five school, like a giant school, so that school has the resources and money to help you get those deals. Usually you're more well-known, specifically sports like football or basketball, doing more sports where you get that attention and that media time really helps you to get those deals because you have more recognition. Second is if you already have a big social media following before NIL, that gave a lot of athletes advantages because they already had that following. They didn't have to start it from scratch. And so now they could just go to a company and say, hey, I have this amount of followers. And they're like, okay, cool. Like, let's team up. Because this, when you have an athlete that has, let's say 50K followers versus one that has 1,000, it's easier to grab the athlete that has 50K. The third group is schools that have collectives. Collectives, think of them as a third party from a college where you have a group of donors come together. They bring their pool of money and they give that to the athlete so that they have deals. My school personally does not have a collective, but lots of athletes get deals through that because they create these deals for them so they don't have to go out and look for these deals. And so for me, who does not fit any of these three categories, how am I doing NIL? I go to a school where half the people I talk to don't know where it is or what the school is. Even though we're a pretty distinguished school, I'm still Division One. It's a smaller Division One school. So how am I getting these deals? Well, what I'm doing differently is that I'm advocating for myself. I'm the one that's out here looking for the deals. I don't have a collective that are just offering me deals. I'm educating brands and companies what NIL is. We're still in a space where you talk to a company and they think I'm just an influencer. Yes, I'm partially an influencer, but I'm an athlete creator. The difference between an influencer and athlete creator is that influencer just has an audience spread across the nation. They have their different niche. They're not an athlete. They could be a fitness influencer like I was, but I'm specifically a current college athlete that has my local community reach, which is different from the influencer because I have the specific community around me that, let's say if I team up with a local store and I say, hey, let's do a deal, I promote the store, more people are likely to go to it because I have that community who lives by the store that would more likely go to there. And so it's different in that, and having to teach companies, okay, like, yes, I'm doing NIL. And like, if you ask them, I would love to do an NIL deal, they just think that they'll offer you an ambassador program. And the thing about that is that everything I'm doing right now, I'm paving the way for future female college athletes, even for guys too, because I'm having companies that are offering me, hey, we'd love for you to be an ambassador. The problem with being an ambassador for companies is that you're doing all this free work, and you're not getting a lot out of it. Maybe they'll give you a free product, but then you have to use their code and you're buying their product just to promote it. And then if someone uses your code, you only get 15% back from the product. And then you're posting X amount of times a week. So now if you're an ambassador for 5-6 different companies, and it's like, okay, this is really hard to keep pushing all this stuff and you're not getting a lot in return. And so if I'm just signing up for all these ambassadorships, in future instances, if an athlete goes to this company and say, hey, I would love to work with you, they're just going to offer them ambassadorship too. And they're not going to do a sponsorship instead, where they actually get paid for the content they create. So I'm very careful with the companies I work with and explain to them why I'm not going to do an ambassadorship, because I don't want another athlete to have the same experience I did with that company, where they are in that position and they don't know what to say. Another thing is that I'll work with a company and they'll say, hey, we'll love to send you a free product in exchange for posts. There's nothing wrong with having a company send you a free product, maybe posting it on your story. But if you're doing a whole bunch of free posts just for like a product, there's a point where there's that fine line where like, okay, I already did this. And if there's no future in where they're actually going to pay you for it, then it's similar to the ambassadorship where you're just doing all this work for free. You're not really getting anything back from it. And where that comes is learning your value as an athlete. I personally struggle with that. I did 20 plus deals on my own before recently signing with an agent. And I would work with companies and they lowball you for your worth. They'll tell you, hey, I'll pay you $50 for a video. That is very low. You should at minimum be charging 300 plus. Right now with my agents, we charge over 4K for a video. So $50 versus 4K, that's a big difference. And what gets to that point where if you're doing all these deals for $50, you start to feel like NIL is not worth it. Because if you do $50, $50, $50, you're putting all this work in and not getting a lot out of it. It is very discouraging. And I was at that point where I'm thinking, if this is what NIL is, I don't really want to do it because all these companies are lowballing me. And so it comes to that point where you have to fight for yourself and advocate, hey, I'm worth more than $50 for all the value I bring to you. Like I should be getting paid a lot more for that. And that's something that lots of athletes currently struggle with, is advocating for their worth. Otherwise, they're just getting lowballed all the time. And these companies are more than comfortable with doing that. And that's where the power of negotiating comes in, and telling these companies and being able to walk away from these companies if they're not going to offer you the money that you want. And the problem is if athletes keep offering or accepting all these $50 deals, these companies are just going to think that's the new normal. And so telling these companies, hey, this is what I want, because, you know, you're paving the way for other athletes, is really important.
Very succinct answer. There's a lot of information in there that's I would not have otherwise known. So first, thank you for sharing and like kind of enlightening me on the situation, because yeah, I think to your point, like I know how much time and effort goes into even just for me to create this podcast. I am slowly beginning to monetize it now, which is something I'm very happy about, but it's a slow burning process. And the amount of effort from my end as the creator of this to have to create videos and do promo on top of me having like a full-time job, being self-employed, living in a foreign, like there's so many other aspects that go into to creating content that I think companies are more than happy to not really acknowledge. And with even like we see it with micro influencers, like there's still so much that you can gain, even if you have less than 2,000 followers. Like there's so much opportunity still. And so I think it's kind of a perfect segue into my next question about being able to dispel some of the common misconceptions for athletes about NIL, because I feel a lot of them think like I have to have a major social media presence for me to be able to land any sort of deal like this. But it's obviously been a very different experience for you. So maybe you have some insight here.
Yeah. One of the top things is that athletes think, as you just said, they have to have a large social media following. That is not true. I have a friend, her name's Lainey Higgins. She's a Division III volleyball player. And she did a deal with Lululemon. She had, at the time, 2,000 followers on Instagram. You do not need to have a ton of followers to do big deals like that. I think she is the epitome of NIL and showing what you can do with it. So shout out to her. But the cool thing about it, as I talked about the difference between influencers and athlete creators, that's the difference in why you don't need that many followers, because you have that specific reach within your community that makes you different. The second thing is that people think, oh, I don't have anything to make content about. I see a lot of people from big Power 5 schools, football players that don't have a social media account, their account's private, they don't make content. I'm just thinking to myself, that is such a wasted opportunity. You're not creating content. Why aren't you creating content? And lots of people think that doing NIL means you have to be an influencer. That is not right at all. I've been pushing people that doing NIL gives you life skills. It teaches you things. On top of that, it gives you a segue to have opportunities that you otherwise would not have. With my NIL, I'm trying to do more community outreach, doing more volunteer programs. I'm trying to start a camp for elementary school and middle schoolers for track and field to teach them how to actually throw before their track meet. So the day before, where they don't have a lot of good coaching or they don't have a lot of practice with it, that way they're more comfortable on meet day the next day so that they can perform at their best. As I mentioned, we talked about before this call, I'm trying to write a children's book and teach younger women and younger girls, like, hey, you can be strong. You are confident, teaching them affirmations. There's so many other things than just being influencer or famous on social media. There's other ways. And I think for someone like me, where I do a sport that's not as well known, track and field, not everyone has a full scholarship. It gives you also that opportunity to make the extra money to help pay for your tuition. A third misconception about it is that lots of people just don't know where to start. Like I said before, you just need to start. You know, how my social media looks is not going to be the same as the next person. And so with that, just starting your journey would be the best advice I could give to someone.
Perfect. Because I was also going to be in my upcoming question is like for any athletes who are looking to get started on their NIL journey to find a deal, like what kind of advice would you give to them based on your own experience?
Yes. And to add on to that, more advice, because I do have lots of really good advice that I'm more than happy to share with people is that reach out, number one, reach out to people who are already doing what you want to do. That's exactly why I want to grow my following. I would follow people who are creating the content that I want to follow, create a hodgepodge of all these different content styles and make it my own. So use people as your inspiration. So now you know trends, you know, how, like, oh, I like that angle that they did it, or that was really funny. I like the way they worded that, and using that as inspiration for your own videos. If you are struggling with how to make content, reach out to other athletes. Reach out to me on Instagram. Reach out to other student athletes. Ask them how they got deals, how they got started. I would reach out to lots of other friends. I have this friend, his name is Connor Prince, who is also recently was a Division III basketball player. Now he's a full-time content creator. He grew his Snap to over 650K followers on Snapchat. And recently, this year, I've been trying to grow my Snapchat more. I reached out to him. I said, hey, how did you do it? He gave me a bunch of tips that were really helpful. And lots of athletes like me, NIL's in the space where we want to help each other grow. No one's trying to gatekeep it. So if you ask people about it, they'll tell you about it. It's just a matter of reaching out because lots of people don't know who wants to do it.
Very great advice. That's so good. Yeah. And also, I didn't even know until recently that you could even have followers on Snapchat. That, like, that's all new to Snapchat? Me.
You'll see, here's the thing. Snapchat is such a hidden gem. If you want to be, let's say, an influencer or make a decent income from Snapchat, people don't talk about this enough. And this is very, you guys, you need to listen up to this. Yes, you could be on TikTok, you could be on Instagram, you could be on YouTube, but you can make the most money on Snapchat. They have this program where they pay you $1,000 every month just for creating content on Snapchat. $1,000. If you get into this program, they have like a list of requirements where you have to be like 18, post at least 10 times a month. And they're pretty easy requirements. And the ways to get into this program is pretty random, I will say. But that's just from posting videos from that you already have on your camera roll to what they call the Snapchat Spotlight, which is basically the TikTok feed, but on Snapchat. So if you are starting to do content creation, for me personally, I just repost the videos I already make onto Snapchat and they perform just as well by making more from Snapchat through that.
Wow.
Hope you learned.
Okay. I've learned so much in this very short conversation. That's huge. Wow. I really wish all of this was available when I was still playing. And like, I'm happy that you shared, you know, you're from a smaller, maybe not as well-known school, which is exactly the case for so many people who choose to stay in Canada instead of going to like any sort of NCAA school. So also kind of letting anyone who's listening from Canada, who's going maybe youth sports or something like this, that this is all very possible for you too, no matter the size of the school, no matter the size of your community starting out, like you can for sure make a decent sort of income that's going to help get you through your university days and even maybe start setting you up for the future as well, which is really cool.
Right. And something I will add, not to discourage her, but currently international students cannot participate in NIL. They're still working through that. But everything I mentioned about Snapchat, you are able to do that in certain countries. I believe Canada should be one of them. So you can still do that and monetize. And everything I said about content creation and starting your brand, I still think international athletes should still participate in at least doing their social media, whether or not they can monetize off of that, because you're still gaining those skills from learning how to create content to learning how to market yourself to learning how to create a solid brand. You're still learning those skills through making your own social media.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I have one final question before I let you go for the day. So in listening to everything and all the valuable information that you've provided us, being not just a one sport, but a dual sport athlete, and also doing content creation while also being a student, I have to ask, how much time do you have to dedicate to content creation as an NIL athlete?
Wow. I don't think I really track it. Sometimes it feels like it's just something I always do whenever I have free time. People ask me, what do you do free time? Oh, I do content creation. And I guess I hang out with friends, maybe go, because it really does take up some time because you have to think about the content you want to create. You have to go and film it. Maybe you have to go somewhere. And so I would say roughly probably 2 hours a day minimum on it. And that's
Weekends
posted.
too.
Yes, that's posted across 4 or 5 of my different platforms. I try to at least use one piece of content and repurpose it for every platform as much as I can. So reposting something I post on Instagram onto my TikTok and Snapchat and my YouTube Shorts, and making sure I've been on LinkedIn as well, meeting, that's where you meet all the decision makers. And so trying to continue to be consistent with that. That way you're not just posting and ghosting. You're being able to show up consistently.
Yeah, that's something that I've also had to learn too, is like if you're creating content, you should be using it on every single platform that you have. And I think some people kind of talk about best practices for specific social platforms, which, okay, maybe there is a little bit of like a difference between posting to, let's say, TikTok and Instagram versus posting to LinkedIn, just based on the type of people that you're going to be connecting with more often than not. But otherwise, like, it's just about changing the wording on some things, and that's really it.
Yeah, it's just knowing what kind of audiences you have on different platforms and how they would best respond to it. Something I post on my TikTok, I'm most likely not going to post on my LinkedIn. So the LinkedIn content is completely different. I'm probably not going to repost onto my other platforms. But making content that I can repurpose is very beneficial because it saves you time, or even just planning what I'm going to do for tomorrow, for the next day. Really helps because then I'll do the time setting. That way, if I want to post during a certain optimal time, but I'm in class, that way I'll just automatically post and I have that automatic posting setting on.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. First, thank you again so much. You know, this has been, I think, very enlightening and valuable information that you're sharing so openly with the listeners of the podcast, who most of which are in North America. So if you aren't already following Sabrina, first of all, you should be, so you can find her social handles down in the show notes. Give her a follow. You'll love her content. I enjoy watching it myself too. And again, like, thank you so much for being here, taking time out of your day on competition day, no less, to have this conversation. It's been really great, and I hope that we'll have an opportunity to get you back on the show soon.
Yes, for sure. Thank you guys so much for having me on here. Have a great rest.